we are holding on Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, about five lines from the end of the narrow line. The line being Lacha.
Okay.
We discussed yesterday the question, when a person borrowed something, he was a shoyl, then he returns it La'acha Yimei She'losa, he returns it after the rental period is over. We said he's not a shoyl anymore, because at that point he has no right to use it as a shoyl anymore, so we said it gets downgraded to some lower level of Shemira. So all this time we were assuming that it meant he's a Shem Masachar, but now actually let's revisit that. Because all this time we've been assuming that he's a Shem Masachar, but why? Maybe not. Maybe he goes all the way down to a Shem Achina. So, do we mean that he's potter from the responsibilities of a shoyl, where he's chayev even for unzin, but he nevertheless is chayev as a shem asachar, gneva v'aveda? Or maybe he's not even a shem asachar. Maybe he goes all the way down to a shem achinam. So Amema says it's logical to say that he is downgraded from a shoyl, but he remains a shema sachar. He's still in the middle of there, like a shema sachar. Because since previously he had all the benefit, because that's the definition of a shoyl, he has all the benefit and none of the liabilities, because he doesn't have to pay for it, he's allowed to use it, etc. Therefore, it's logical to say that in return for the fact that he had that hana all this time, mahana hava, that he should have to be mahana, he should have to give a certain hana to the owner, namely that he will still remain responsible for it to a large extent until it reaches the owner. That he won't be a shoyl, fine, because he has no more ability to use it. But the fact that up until now he had the hana of being able to use it, that itself should be considered sort of his schar, that he should therefore remain a shoyl sachar until it actually reaches the owner or his designated shliach or whatever.
He has all the responsibility.
He's chayav for gneva, aveda, oinsim, but he has none of the liability in the sense that he doesn't have to pay for it, he's allowed to use it. That's what it means, kolana shalai. He gets all of the benefits with none of the liabilities that you would normally have when you take something of somebody else's, and therefore we put on him all the responsibilities of to be responsible for gneva, aveda, etc. Okay.
He has no financial obligation.
That's what I mean.
He has all the
No, it doesn't matter whether it's his fault or not. The fact of the matter is, he didn't return it. It's the end of the 30 days. Now is when he has to return it. So, yeah. Tanya Kabaseta Amemer, and in fact, we learn a Braise in accordance with Amemer. Halakeach Kelim Beisa Uman, if somebody goes, a Chosen, goes and picks up Kelim from, like jewelry or whatever, from a craftsman, L'shagrin L'beis Chomiv, to send them to his father-in-law's house. So he did Kiddushin with a woman, and in those days, you know, there was a year's time, as we learned back in Ksubas and a Kiddushin, there was usually a year's time between the Edusin and the Nisuin. During that time, you would want to send presents to your Kala and her family, somewhat like we do nowadays during an engagement. So he picks up these Kalim, or he's buying them sort of on consignment, to send them to his father-in-law's house. But Amalai, and he says, I'm taking them on this condition. If they accept them from me, if they consider them worthy presents, and then fine, then I'll pay you for them, because then it means that I'll be keeping them. And if not, then I want to return them to you. However, I will pay you for the Tovas Hanah. The Tovas Hanah is the fact they still, even if they don't accept the presents, let's say we already have this, or it's not our style or whatever, but still, they'll like me, they'll appreciate me for the fact that I gave them a present. That's the Tovas Hanah. I'll pay you something for that. Yeah. So now what happens? The Nansu, and now what happens is, an onus happened, let's say, for example, he was held up, and now what happens? Is he responsible to pay for that? Basically, the question boils down to, one way of looking at it, is he a Shema Chinam, or is he a Shema Sachar, or a Shoyal? So, Ba'alicha Chayav, if it happened on the way, when he's taking them to his father-in-law's house, then he is Chayav. Rashi quotes based on a Gemara in Bava Basra that the reason is because basically he is a lekeach. Since we know, since the price of them is known, and he did mashicha on them, therefore it's considered as if he already bought them. But fine, it's not enough question of shomer or not, right? According to Rashi, it's a question of basically has he bought them or not. But fine, he bought them. He agreed with the guy that he has the ability to return them and then pay only tevas hanah. So fine, but he bought them, so therefore he's responsible. On the other hand, when this Gemara is also in the Nedarim, we learned over there that the Ram and the Rosh have a different explanation of it, which is that he is like a shoyl. He's like a shoyl. He's borrowing them and saying that, great. Anyway, so he's chayev. B'chazira potter. But if it happens on his way back, then he is potter from Oinsin. Mifneshu kenoisa socha. Because on the way back, he's only like a shema socha. So he is a shema socha. He is a shema socha. He starts as a buyer or shoyl, as the case may be, a lokeach or a shoyl. And he comes back at when they say they don't want it, then he comes back as a shema socha. So Rashi explains, he is a shema socha in the sense he had a benefit out of it, that he was able to show them off to his future in-laws. That's the hana. However, he's not going to be keeping them. So the point is, that fits with what Amema says, because there you have, Rashi says it's sort of a kavachomer. Madach over there, where he's like a buyer, nevertheless, we downgrade him to a shema socha once he doesn't need it anymore. How much more so if he were a real shoyl, according to the Ran and the Rosh, that he really is a shoyl, then yeah, it's exactly the same situation. So therefore, you see that, yes, once the time he's supposed to be using it is over, once the time of being a shoyl is over, then he goes down to being a shema socha, which is exactly what Amema said, and that's exactly the assumption that we made in the previous part of the sugya.
That's
the halacha. A case related to this: Hahu gavra de zavin lechamer lechavre. There was a person who sold a donkey to somebody else. Amalei, and the person who bought it said, in a similar vein, kamamtinalei leduchta pliny. I plan to take this donkey to such and such a place. Imizdabna mutav. If I'm able to sell it there, then good. V'iloi ma'adanu lochnialuch. And if not, then I want to have the right to return it to you. So it's similar, somewhat similar to the son-in-law taking the kalim, taking the jewelry to his father, his in-laws. Ozal, so he went, he wasn't able to find a buyer for it over there. Ubahadi to Kaosa Itnis, as he was on his way back, an onus happened. He was held up. Also a Kamed Rav Nachman, Chayve. So he came to Rav Nachman. You would think based on the previous case he should be Potter, but here Rav Nachman says he's Chayve. Ace Be Rabbala. Meaning a Shoyol or a Lakeach, as the case may be, Ace Be Rabbala Rav Nachman. So Rabba really Rava, it's supposed to be asked Rav Nachman. What do you mean? We just said Nansu Balika Chayv Machazira Potter Neshu Kenosia Socha. You just said the Mishnah says over there that the Braisa rather says that he's like that once he's on the way back he's only like a Nosia Socha. A Nosia Socha is Potter Mainsin.
It's a Shema
Socha. Nosia Socha is another word for it, Amalei, he says no. Rav Nachman says no. You have to understand the difference. Chazora Dehai Halicha. In a case like this, the return is on the same level as the going. My timer, svarahu, because it's a logical thing. Let's say on the way back, if he were to find a customer to buy this donkey on the way back, wouldn't he sell it to him? So in the case of a chosen with the jewelry, there's only one particular place that he wants to bring it to, his in-laws. If they don't want it, he's not looking for other customers. He's not going into the jewelry business. Therefore, it's logical to say there's a difference between going and returning. Right. He's already niskadish to the first one. Yeah, exactly. Whereas in the case of here with the donkey,
when he goes back.
Because even when he's on the way back, potentially, he still could find a buyer for it.
But it's still potential.
But he took it there to begin with. Potentially, I'm going to find a buyer. So therefore, there's no difference between the going and the returning. Either way, he's equally chayav as a shoyl, as the case may be. Yeah. But that's the point. In other words, that's what Rav Nachman is saying. Still, even if he didn't find a buyer there, he has the option to sell it to somebody else on the way back. Yes.
No.
Well, you see why the halacha is like Rav Nachman and Dinim Amanas. He was a dayan. He dealt with these kinds of things on a day-to-day basis. Okay. Onward. The Mishnah had said, Shmoli v'eshmo l'chal shay masakha. That if two people say to each other, you watch my thing for me, and I will watch your thing for you, each of them is considered a shay masakha. Because each of them is getting the benefit of if the other one is watching their thing for them. Okay, the question is, v'amai. Now, okay, we can understand why they're each a shema socha. However, why should we say each of them is chayev? Let's say it was stolen. Shmira b'bayrinti. This is a case where you're guarding something where the owner is also working for you. Now, we're going to talk about it. The Torah talks about it briefly in the case of a shoyl. The Torah mentions, b'chayi shalish me'im re'eu v'nishba re'beis. The pasuk says, b'olav ein imo shalom yishalom. If the owner of the object or the animal, whatever it is not with him, then he has to pay. In b'olav imo lo yishalom. But if his master is with him, he does not have to pay. We'll learn the details in the eighth perek. We'll learn extensively about it at the beginning of the eighth perek. Basically, what it boils down to is la halacha. If Reuven borrows something from Shimon, But he also, at the time of the borrowing, he had Shimon working for him as an employee, or in this case over here, we're doing work for him, like watching his thing or whatever. Then he's potter from anything that happens to the thing. We don't apply to him the usual rules of Shema Chinam, Shema Socher, Socher, Shoyo. Doesn't matter. As long as he's working
for him.
Yeah. So again, we'll wait a couple of weeks. We'll learn about all the details of it. But the point is over here, Lechora, each one of them has the other one is working for them, is watching their thing for them. It should be considered Shmir B'Bailim, and therefore, fine, they're a Noisa Sacher. The fact is, they're positive for anything that happens.
Because
Shmir B'Bailim. Because that's there's a custom. There's a custom. If I have you working for me, and then I borrow something from you, I am positive for anything that happens. There's a custom. We'll talk about in Perek Hashoyo. We'll talk about in the eighth Perek. We'll learn about the details of it. We'll also talk from the Neder about something that Eva talked about in the Sicha, the deeper idea behind it. No, but the case of our Mishnah is they're not both doing it at the same time. We're saying Reuven says to Shimon, "You watch my thing for me today," and Shimon says, "And you watch my thing for me tomorrow." So each of them is a Socher. Each of them is a socher in the sense that each of them is not a socher. Sorry, a shemah socher. Each of them is getting benefit for it. Each of them is getting paid by the other one doing the work for him. However, it's not shmir b'bailim because neither one is employed by the other at the time when he borrowed the object or not borrowed when he's watching the object. Yeah.
And then there's no shmir.
So then there's no shmir b'bailim. Right.
It has to be not contextual.
It has to be at the same time. Yeah. Well, again, turn it up on him. Shmurli v'eshmur l'cha, you have all the possible cases. If one says to the other, "You watch for me, and I will watch your thing for you," or hashileni v'ashilcha, you lend me your thing, I'll lend you my thing. Shmurli v'ashilcha, or watch my thing for me, and I will lend you something. Or hashileni v'eshmur l'cha, or you lend me something, and I will watch something for you. Kula nasu shomer sacha zelazem. All of them, even the ones where they're saying shoyel, even so, they're still considered only a shema sacher. Because again, a shoyel, the definition we said before, is kol hanah shaloi. He has all of the benefit and none of the financial obligations. Therefore, we put all of the here. They each have financial obligations towards the other to watch his thing for him or whatever. Yeah. So therefore, you can't call it a shoyel. It's a shema sacher, just under another name. Yeah. Again, the question is, v'amai shmir b'bailim? Again, you can ask the same question. Isn't it a case of shmir b'bailim? Now, which cases are we talking about? Rashi learns it's only the first case, only the case of Shmurli ve'eshmur l'cha, where each of them is watching something for the other. But for example, if one of them says, "Lend me your thing, and I will lend you mine," then and all the other cases, Rashi argues that then you can't call it Shmir b'bailim, because then you can't say both of them are doing work for each other. On the other hand, the Rambam learns that all of them are indeed considered R&D.
Can, but they're not simultaneous.
We're talking about simultaneous. Right. We're talking about, yeah. But so Rashi learns it's only the first one, because in the case, let's say, Shmurli Vashilcha, what does it mean? It means Reuven is saying to Shimon, "I'm going to give you something to watch for me," which at that point, Shimon is effectively employed by Reuven, "and I will lend you something." So Shimon is also, or Shimon has borrowed something from Reuven, but it's the other way around. Shimon is watching something for Reuven. He's employed by Reuven, not the other way around. So therefore, Rashi learns that only the first case of Shmurli v'eshmur l'cha can be Shmir b'bailim. The other three are not. On the other hand, the Rambam, also the Torah mentions the Ramah, and some other Rishonim have various ways of learning how all of them can, in fact, be Shmir b'bailim. So Shmir b'bailim. Again, we would have to say it's talking about, like we explained in the Mishnah, that it means you watch for me today and I'll watch for you tomorrow. And again, according to the Rambam and the Ramah and the rest of them, it would have to be the same thing. For example, Shmurli today, Vashilcha tomorrow, etc.
And then there's no
Bailim involved.
Right.
Yes, but if it was simultaneous, Shmurli Vashilcha, for example, then they learn that it would be. Yes. Okay.
So, then it's
Shmurli Bailim, and therefore they're possible.
Because you cannot be chayav for something.
So the chinuch says a logical reason behind it. I think it's the Sefer HaChinuch says a logical reason behind it, that you can't say that you're liable to me as an employee, and at the same time I should be liable to you for your object having been lost or stolen or what have you. But again, when we get to Perek HaShoyo, we'll talk about it in more detail. That's the shem. So Gemara tells a case in this connection. Hanu ahalui. There were these people who sold ahal. Which is it actually says two possibilities. Either it means lie, like you use for soap, or it means or it means aloe, whatever. They sold this kind of stuff for a living. The Chol Yom have Afilo Chad Minayim. Every day, the rule was one of their group would bake bread for the group. Every day it would be a different person. At this point, we're assuming that it was his turn. That it was one particular person.
Anu
Aluya, these people who were selling al. The Chol Yom have Afilo Chad. Whatever we just said. They were selling al. They were selling aloe or whatever. They were selling plants or they were selling herbs or whatever for a living. But they used to travel together to sell this as a group. So therefore, as a group, every day we need bread to eat. So therefore, the deal was that every day one member of the group is responsible for baking bread for them. One day they tell one particular person in the group, bake for us. At this point, we're going to assume that it was his turn, actually. We'll see soon whether that was the case. So he says to them, naturally, glimai. Okay, watch my coat for me while I'm doing the baking. Ada also, by the time he came back, Pashuba, they were Peshea, they'd been careless with the coat, the ignorant, and it got stolen. Also the Kameh de Rapapa, so they came to Rapapa for a din Torah, Chayavinu, and he was Machayav them, you were Peshea, you're Chayav. However, Omrulei Rabbanan le Rapapa, however, the Rabbanan asked Rapapa, Amai, Peshea Bailam, he, isn't it a case where, yes, they were careless, but he was in their employ because they told him to bake bread for them. And in that case, he's working for them.
He was.
We assume he was baking bread for them at the time when he told them to wash his coat.
Right.
We assume he right away went off and started doing the baking. That would be a case of Shiva violence. So and we will learn. We'll have a sugya later on when we talk about these dinim in Perek HaShoel. We will talk. Actually, the Gemara is going to allude to it in a minute. That there is actually a machlokas over there. Whether when we say your potter in Baal of Imai, does that mean for only the regular kind of things like Neva Vaveda or things, or does it even include Pshia? A Shemachinam, let's say. A Shemachinam is watching something for somebody. Meanwhile, that somebody is also employed by him. If he, a Shemachinam, the only thing he can be chayav for is Pshia, or Shlichus Yad, whatever. So if he were to be Peshea, would we still make him potter on the basis that Baal of Imai? Or maybe not. We're going to have a discussion of it over there in the Eighth Perek. The maskana is going to be that yes, even so, he's potter. We'll see. Because when the Torah says he's potter, it means across the board. But the point is, so they ask him, this is Pshiba Bailim, in that case, you should be potter. Ichsif. So Rapapa was embarrassed that he had forgotten that detail. L'soif iglai milsa. In the end, though, it turned out, they found out, Dahu shayt shichra habakashafi, that at the time when they were Peshea and when the coat was stolen, he was not baking bread for them. He had gone off to drink beer. As soon as they had told him, like this, when they told them, go bake for us, and he immediately told them, you wash my coat for me. Instead of leaving right away to go baking, he went to go take a drink first. So at that time, it's not Sheba Bailin. He's not employed by them yet. Therefore, Rapapa, after all, was right in his psak, even though he didn't know it. It's an example, and it's an example of siyata d'shmaya. It's an example of how we say that a rav has siyata d'shmaya to come to the right psak halacha, even if he doesn't know all the facts. They gave him the wrong facts, but even so, he was able to. Yeah.
Why was he embarrassed? If it's the wrong fact, and
because he didn't know at the time. Later on, they found out the facts. Yeah. No, if the fact had been, if he had been baking, then yes, Rapapa's psak would have been wrong. But like this, yeah. Yeah, they tell, for example, a famous story about the Noda Yehuda that when he first became the Rav of Prague, there were some people in there who weren't too happy with him, as any good Rav always has opponents.
Sure.
So they decided to show him up by they'll bring him some complicated question in halacha, and he probably won't get it right. And, they came up with this whole complicated scenario. And he did, and then they said, "Nu, he didn't get it right." He said, "Nu." They said to him, "Nu, you don't know the halacha." He says to them, "You got to understand, the rav has siyata b'shmaya, the pasuk in halacha, when it's an actual, real, live case in halacha. A theoretical thing like this, okay, so I got it wrong. A person's only human, but that doesn't take away from the fact when I pasuk in halacha, it will be with siyata b'shmaya." Okay, onward. The question is, yes.
The Yehuda pasuk is wrong.
But it wasn't a pasuk though. Actually, it was a theoretical case. Fine, I can understand this case according to the opinion in that sugya later on, that says that even if you were Kasheya, as long as the owner was employed by you, you are Potter, Mishavach Yifsit. Well, then that explains why the Papa was embarrassed that he had forgotten that detail. El Lamanda Omachaya, but according to the opinion in that sugya there that says you are Chaya for Pia, you're just Potter for the other things that are to some extent beyond your control, Gneva, Aveda, etc. Am I Yifsit? Then why? Well, not necessarily, but whatever.
That was my question.
Yeah. What?
Am I?
Yeah, am I? The wiser Papa embarrassed. Yeah, Lachora, he should answer. You're telling me, yes, Balavimai. No, you're telling me Balavimai. However, that doesn't apply to Pia. No, so the answer is Ella. We have to revisit the story and understand the details of the story differently in order to understand that. It would be like this. How Huyama Lavi Day happened. Before we assumed that it was this guy's regular turn to bake that. Now we're going to assume that it wasn't actually his regular turn. Nevertheless, they tell him, we want you to take a turn anyway, even though it's not really your turn today, and bake for us. And he says to them, for the reward, for the payment, for the fact that I am doing you a favor and baking for you, instead of saying, no, but the guy whose regular turn it is, do that, then I want you to wash my clothes for me. The difference is, in the first way, we thought they were shemir fina. The only way they could be hired if the coat was stolen would be if they were Peshea. Now, according to this scenario, we're assuming that they were Shomer Sachar. Well, Shomer Sachar normally would be hired for Gneva Baveda. And that's for sure. If Baal of Imai, everybody agrees, you're Potter. You don't need the Machlokas with a Pshia Bavila or not.
Even if you were Peshea?
No, but you don't have to say they were Peshea. You could say that they weren't Peshea.
Right.
That's for Shomer Sachar, you don't need to say. Right. Abda Asta Ibniv, by the time he came back, it had gotten stolen without Shia. So in other words, we have two key differences between the first version of the story and the second. One is, in the first version, it was his turn. Therefore, there's no special payment that they owe him for doing it. It's his turn. Therefore, when they wash the coat, they are Shomer Chinam. And because of that, the only way they could be Chayev is if they were Peshea.
The second version is they're
asking him to do it out of turn. Therefore, as a reward for that, he wants them to pay him by washing his coat, makes them Shomer Sachar. And we don't have to say that they were Peshea. We don't have to say they were Peshea. It got stolen in the normal way for Shomer Sachar. That's liability. And also, the Chamei de Papa Chayvinu continues the story the same way. They came to the Papa.
Shia is also included in, but not as
if. Obviously, but you don't need Shia by Shomer Sachar. You don't need, you could say. Gneva is enough, right. And Chayvinu, and he was Machayev them, on the basis of being Shomer Sachar, and Omer Lila Bottom of Papa Hashemir Bavayim, he, Ichsif, and he was embarrassed, we'll say, the Glaimil, so now he shied the Shechra Havashot. So according to that version, we can understand it without having to resort to Pshia Bavayim, and therefore we can understand the story according to that opinion as well. Okay. Another case.
Conclusion of all this.
Conclusion so far is, if there's Shemir Bavayim, your Potter, which again we'll talk about in more detail in the next, in two Prakim from now, whether Pshia, yes or no, we'll see over there. The halacha is that it is. Yeah. Okay. Another case. There were two people who were once walking on the road. One was tall, the other one was short. The tall one was riding on a donkey. And he had, his coat was made out of linen, which when linen gets wet, it doesn't absorb that much water. So it's a better thing to wear. If you have to wade through the water, you're better off wearing linen than wool, which absorbs a lot of water. Gutsa michasi sarbala. The short one was wearing a woolen cloak, v'kamaski b'kare, and he was walking on foot. Himati l'nahara, when they came to a river, shakle l'sarbala, the short one who was walking took the linen coat belonging to the tall one who's riding on the donkey. He took his woolen coat. He put his woolen coat on the donkey because he didn't want to get wet while they were walking through the river. Then he took the other guy's linen coat, the ichsiba day, and covered himself with it again because he figured that linen is more impervious to water, and therefore And as they were walking through the river, the water swept away the linen coat. One thing I saw, some people were pointing out, why does the Gemara need to mention that one was tall and one was short? One thing is because we're going to see over here, whether it's Shemitah B'Bailim, if the tall one can't wear the short one's coat because it's too short for him, then it can't really be considered Shelah B'Bailim because the tall one can't really use the short one's coat. But another idea of it was because he was short and therefore the coat was too long for him, therefore the water was able to grab it and sweep it away. Okay, anyway. also the kamei de rova chayve. So the case came to rova, and he was machayev him to pay for the linen coat. Omri le rabbanon the rova, so the rabbanon asked rova amai sheila b'baylim he. Isn't this a case of sheila b'baylim? L'chura you have each of them is lending something to the other one. The short guy who's walking has put his coat on the donkey so that the other guy should look after it. He's guarding it for him, or maybe even borrowing it and wearing it himself, and vice versa. The short guy is wearing the linen coat, so they're both borrowing from each other. Shouldn't it be she'ela b'baylim? Ichsif, and again, Rova was embarrassed that he hadn't thought of that detail. And again, in the end, it turned out that actually, not like we assumed originally, that he put it there and took the other guy's coat with permission, but rather he put his coat on the donkey without asking the other guy to watch it for him, and he took the other guy's coat without asking. Therefore, there's no shayla that he's a gazlan. As a gazlan, sure, he's chayav for anything that happens to it. So therefore, again, Rava's psak was right after all, even though he didn't have all the facts in front of him at the time.
Wrong logic, but right conclusion.
Right. An interesting thing that's brought from, I think, from the Ishbitzer or somebody, that Rava was from Shevet Yehuda. And Shevet Yehuda, he says, he brings from sources, has a special ability, a special siyata d'shvaya to be able to come to the right psak halacha. We look back in Sota that Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Yehuda himself, the original Yehuda, the son of Yaakov, to have that ability in Gan Eden. We find later on David had that ability. Lemos HaMashiach, he'll have that. So it's an ability that exists in Shevet Yehuda, and he says it based on these stories that it may be that we find there's a few places we'll see later on in the eighth parak. We'll have a couple of more cases also where Rava originally gave a psak halacha. They argued that it's wrong based on the fact, and then it turned out that after all the facts were different. Yeah, because he had that special piyata d'shmaya. Yeah. Okay. Another case. Hu gavra de ogel lechamra lechavra. A person once rented a donkey to somebody else. Amalei, and he says to him, Chazi, take a look. I want you to be careful. Loi tezel ba'orcha de Nahar Pekud. Don't go on the Nahar Pekud road, on the road to Nahar Pekud, the Ikamaya, because there is water on the road, and the donkey may drown or get swept away in flash floods or whatever. Zil ba'orcha de Neresh de Lakamaya. Instead, go on the Neresh road where there's no water. Well, also ba'urcha de Nahar Pekud. Instead, the guy didn't listen. He went on the Nahar Pekud road, umishamra, and the donkey died. He also, when he came back, Omar, he said, Ein ba'urcha de Nahar Pekud hazi. Yes, it's true, I went on the Nahar Pekud road. Umihu lekamaya. However, no, I am claiming there was no water at the time. Therefore, I should be potter. You
cannot
can't
be believed. I mean,
never mind that. But wait. So I'm arguing there was no water there on the road at the time. The donkey died of some unrelated cause. Therefore, I should be potter. It's Mesa Machas Malacha. Amalei Rava, or Rabba, it says on the side. So Rava or Rabba says, okay, Mali Lashaker. Yes, you can say, what does he have a reason to lie? In other words, it's a migui. Here's a migui. Iboy Amalei Anova Urcha de Neresh Azi. He could have just as well said, I went on the Neresh road, and the donkey died. So if he instead is claiming the weaker claim, yes, I went on the Nahar Pekud road, but this time it happened to be dry, we ought to believe him with a migui. But that's what a migui is, right? He could have made a stronger claim, which it's true, it would have been a lie. That's how a migui works. But he could have made a stronger claim. Instead, he chose to make a weaker claim. Shouldn't we believe him?
Maybe.
Amalei Abaye, Mali the Shakir, claim Edim Layam Yunin. Yes, but we do not say Mali the Shakir. We do not say a migui when there are Edim. What kind of Edim? Rashi says, Rashi learns, it's not that there were Edim. Anan Sahabi, it's as if we are Edim. That the Nahar Pekud road always has water on it. It's a given. So you're claiming that one freak thing had happened, there wasn't. You want to do that, you've got to bring some kind of proof. Otherwise, we are effectively Edim, that it's always full of water, and therefore that it's a dangerous road to go.
And therefore,
you don't have a migui. The Rama Foshim would say that actually maybe what it is there were Edim that he in fact went on the Nahar Pekud road. And then in that case, then you can't do a migui. Okay, the Mishnah had said, Shmoli v'omolai hanach lefanai. What if one person...
What was he considered as a...
So he's a socher. He's a socher, but he was Peshea. First of all, he was over al-Tahas Bailey.
He is a
shomer. No, he's a socher. He rented it.
He rented it.
But he's a socher, just like we learned in the Mishnah the other day, for example, that you rented a donkey with the understanding you're going to take it on a mountain, and instead he took it in the valley, or vice versa, or whatever. We said, according to the mayor, you're going to be chayav no matter what happens, because you're ma'ar al-das balabais, and therefore you're a gazlan. Even according to the chachamim, if the cause of death of the animal can be attributed to the difference in climate or whatever, then you're chayav. And here it is attributable. We take it as a given that there's always water on the Nahar Pekud Road, and that the animal died because it drowned in the water. And if you want to say differently, we got to have some evidence.
It was against the Dasha Bani.
So the Mishnah said, Shmur li ba'amalei hanach lefanai. If one person says to the other, watch my thing for me, and the other one says, put it down in front of me, then we said he's a shomer chinam. Mm-hmm. However, Amar Rav Huna, amalei hanach lefanecha, what if he says, put it down in front of you, then he is neither kind of shomer. Because by saying, put it down in front of you, it amounts to saying, I don't want to have anything to do with it. You want it watched? You sit here yourself and watch it. I want nothing to do with it. Okay. Question is, what if he doesn't say either one? What if he just says, put it down? He doesn't say, put it down in front of me, which would make him a shomer chinam. He doesn't say, put it down in front of you, which means he's not a shomer at all. Just put it down. What does that mean? Well, my, what's the din? Toshma, well, come, let's prove it from the Mishnah. Shmor liva omalei hanach lefanei shomer chinam. The Mishnah had said that if he says, put it down in front of me, he's a shomer chinam. Hostama, v'loi klum. Which implies if he doesn't say lefanei, then nothing. He's not a shomer at all. Okay, problem is with that. Adarava, mida'amar Rav Huna hanach lefanecha hudein aloi shomer chinam v'loi shomer sachar. Consider, Rav Huna knew our Mishnah, the Amoraim knew all the Mishnayos. If he, nevertheless, formulated his deed by saying, hanach lefanecha, then you neither a shomer chinam nor a shomer sachar. Hostam a shomer chinam habi. That means at least Rav Huna must be trying to say that if you just say hanach, then you are indeed a shomer chinam. Okay, elam ha'hol lekel mishma minah. So you can't prove it one way or the other. Either the Mishnah or Rav Huna's statement is not being perfectly exact. We're going to have to prove from some other. We're going to have to prove it from some other place. Okay. Lema katanoi. Fine. Should we say that this is actually machlokes katanoi? This question about if you just said hanach. Namely, we learned in Bava Kamma, we learned a couple of different cases over there. You had a case, for example, of a potter who brings his pots into somebody else's chotzer, and then while they're in the chotzer, the owner's shur breaks them. Is the owner chayav a potter for the pot? We had another case where he brought in his own shur, and the shur, the balabais, gored it. And we had a third case over there, he brought in his payrus, and the animal ate him. So in all those cases, we said im hichnis b'rshus ba'al chotzer chayev. So the Tanakhama had said over there that if he brought it in without permission, then the balabais is not chayev, and Adarabba, the potter himself, is chayev if the animal gets injured by it or whatever. But im hichnis b'rshus ba'al chotzer chayev, but if he brought it in with the permission of the owner of the chotzer, then the owner of the chotzer is chayev for any hezek, because when he says to him, bring it in, amounts to saying, bring it in and I'll guard it for you. And I'll watch it for you. So therefore, now he's responsible. And therefore, if his animal breaks it or eats it or what have you, then he's chayav. Rebbe says no. But kulam ain't chayav actually kabul the balabais lishmer. With all of them, he's not the balabais is not chayav unless he explicitly says that I will watch it. Because otherwise, come in amounts to saying. Rebbe says, come in amounts to saying. I give you permission to come in, but you got to sit here with your pots or your animal or what have you. I'm not giving you permission to leave it over here and walk out and make me responsible. So therefore, that seems to be the same kind of thing. According to the Tanakhama, it would come out that if you say Hanach, then you are a Shomer. And according to Rebbe, not.
Because you have to say it explicitly.
Because you have to say it explicitly.
And the Tanakhama, you don't.
The Tanakhama, you don't. The Gemara says, Mimai. How do you know that that's the right inference? Who says that in fact this fits with that same Machlokas Tanoim? Dilma ad kan le kamir rabbanon hasem el bechotzer debas naturi. Maybe the rabbanon are only talking about in that case a chotzer, which is something which is guarded. When you bring something into a chotzer, what's the point of bringing it in? It's a chotzer. It has walls and whatever around it. So therefore, it's easy to guard it over there. Therefore, the rabbanon can assume that if you just tell them come in without further specifying that I will watch it, it means ayil de interlach kamalei. It can mean you bring it in and I'll watch it for you because there's no great tircha in watching in a chatzer where it's walled in, where it's fenced in.
It's not such a big.
It's not such a big
shmira.
Yeah, aval hacha. But over here, you're talking about one person says to the other in the reshus rabbim, let's say, or the suite, yeah, watch this for me, and he says hanach shukalav bar naturihu. A shuk is not a place where it's going to be easy to watch it. anachmativ notalachot amalei. Maybe the Rabbanon would say that's different. If you just say put it down, it implies put it down and you wash it. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't want to have the responsibility of guarding in a shuk where it's much harder to keep an eye on it. So therefore, maybe even the Rabbanon would agree that hanach in a shuk is different than hanach in a chotzer. And inami, or another way of looking at it, the other way.
If he didn't want to watch it, he would, in the Rosh Hashanah, he should have said no.
He could have said no, he could have said hanach l'panach, but whatever, by saying hanach is also, it's not necessarily saying, it's the equivalent, we can say it's the equivalent of saying hanach l'panach. Inami, or we can look at it the other way around. Adkan like Alma Rebbe Hossam Elabachseroi. Rebbe might only be talking over there where he says that you explicitly have to say, I'm going to watch it. Faket. Because it's your chotzer. Because if you're going to bring something in, you need reshus from the balabas. So therefore, just giving him permission to come in just amounts to kivinothalachot amalei. All it can mean is, I'm giving you permission to bring it in. That doesn't mean I'm accepting the responsibility to watch it. That's two things you'd be asking for. One, to bring it in, and two, for me to watch it. I'm giving you permission for the first one. But over here in the street, hanach v'anam in tarnak amalei. Over here, when he says hanach, it must mean put it down and I'm willing to watch it. We could say a coin
again.
Why is that? Because if you just meant put it down and watch it yourself, does he have to ask for permission to put it down? Obviously, by saying put it down, it you can't just say it means put it down, like go ahead and watch it yourself. He has no reason to say put it down then. You have perfect right to put it down without me saying so. Obviously, therefore, it must mean that put it down and I'm willing to watch it to you. So you can't prove anything from that case either, one way or the other, what the Rabbanon or what Rebbe would hold. The actual halacha is that the actual halacha, since the Gemara hasn't specified, then the halacha is that you're not a shomer unless you actually accepted responsibility for it, unless you explicitly said by saying hanach lefanai, or words to that effect. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you just said hanach stam, then you're indeed not a shomer chinam or shomer. Then you're nothing, right? Mm-hmm. And how much more so if you said hanach lefanai?
Well, that's a refuse.
Yeah. Onward. Next, the Mishnah had said, "Hilvo ala mashkin shema sachar." If a person lends money to somebody else using a mashkin, then the lender is a shema sachar on that mashkin. Question is,
the hana is what they say.
The hana, we'll see as we go through the sugya what the hana is exactly. Question is, lema masnisin deloiter of the yezir. Should we say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer? Now, there's no great problem with that, because fine, the halacha usually isn't like Rabbi Eliezer anyway. However, we would usually like to assume that a stam Mishnah goes according to everybody.
Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Eliezer.
No, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. What? That the halacha should not be like Rabbi Eliezer, we're not so worried about. But that a stam Mishnah should be like only some Tanoim, we don't like to do that, because then the Mishnah should have specified. The Mishnah should have said one opinion, and then Rabbi Eliezer Oimer such and such.
It doesn't.
Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hamalves Chaver al Mashkin. If somebody lends another person money on a Mashkin, but Obed Hamashkin, and the Mashkin gets lost, Yishav over Yitzam La'osav Divi Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that all the malva has to do is swear that he wasn't pesheya, and then he's still able, and he's potter from paying for the mashkin, and he's still able to collect his debt, because all he is the shem achinam. All he is the shem achinam. Rashi explains Rabbi Eliezer's logic is like this: you could think of two different reasons why a person might take a mashkin. One would be he's taking it not that he intends to use it, that he'll actually be able to sell it in case the guy defaults on a loan and he'll be able to sell it and then get back his money. That could be one reason why you get a mashkin. The other reason could just be that you take it in order to that you take it to be more certain. This way the guy can't deny that you lent him money unless there's a shtar. We'll talk about it in a second if there's a shtar. But if the mills out there, the benefit of a mashkin is the guy can't deny it's proof that you lent him money. He can't deny. You bring him to base and he says, I never borrowed money from you. Well, what's your object doing in my possession?
If he says you stole it.
Then you need to bring some kind of proof, whatever. But you can say the same thing. You know, b'chlal, when you have a person claim, we learned at the end of Bava Kamma, for example, what happens, one person claims you stole something and the other person says, I bought it from you. We talked about it over there. We had a sugya over there who the burden of proof is on. Okay, anyway, the point is that Rabbi Eliezer takes the view that the reason for a mashkin is in order to be proof, not to use it to actually collect the debt from. Therefore, fine, the mashkin is lost. Okay, you were shemachinam on it. You weren't going to get any specific benefit out of it, such as a monetary benefit. Therefore, you're shemachinam. You just have to swear, and you still collect your whole chayv. Give it up to the other. Rabbi Akiva, I mean, yachal lo loima lo. Rabbi Akiva says that no, the loiva can argue back. Look, you only lent me on the basis of this mashkin. So if the mashkin is gone, then your money is gone also, as we will see as we go through the sugya. There's basically two different ways of understanding it. One is, and we'll see, Rashi and Tosfos discuss it. One way of looking at it is that we may be talking about if he specifically said at the time that I'm accepting this mashkin as security for the entire loan, or at least where the mashkin is the equivalent of the entire loan. Then we could say Ovad Mashkin of the Moisefa. The other way of looking at it is that since the Malva has a responsibility to return that Mashkin, then the Loiva can say, I'm not obligated to return you your money until you return me my Mashkin. The Mashkin's gone, then I'm not obligated. Okay. Anyway, the point is...
That's the point of Rabbi Akiva.
That's Rabbi Akiva. So, okay. Avol Hilvohu Elef Zuz B'Shtar, but continues the Braisa, if he lent him 1,000 Zuz, let's say, with a Shtar, which the key difference is there's a shtar over here. Now when there's a shtar, you have independent proof. You don't need the mashkin as proof of the loan because you have the shtar as proof of it. And because of the shtar also, that also makes it that you don't have to collect from this mashkin because you have karka. There's any present karka of the guy, even if he sells it later on, is meshuvah, as we know throughout Shas. So therefore,
without being included in the shtar.
No, automatically. Achrayas Torah Sefer, we talk. Yeah. So yeah. So therefore, by having a shtar, you've accomplished that. You've accomplished all the usual things you could accomplish with a mashkin. So therefore, if nevertheless you took a mashkin, divrei hakol over the mashkin over the ma'aseh, then everybody would agree that if the mashkin is lost, then the money is lost also. Because then the only reason you would have taken the mashkin is obviously to be payment, or at least partial payment of the debt. So in that case, yeah. The point is, we see that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the Malver who has the Mashkin in his possession is a Shema Chinam, and our Mishnah says he's a Shema Sachar. Okay. The answer is, Afilu Tamer Rabbi Eliezer. No, you could actually answer that our Mishnah is even according to Rabbi Eliezer. Because there could be a difference. Did he take the Mashkin at the time of the loan? Or did you take it later on? Later on would mean that, so taking it at the beginning would be that to begin with, when I lend you the money, I take the mashkin right then and there, which we could say then in that case, it depends. If it's without a shtar, you could be taking it at your, again, you're only taking it in order to make sure that the guy remembers to pay back his loan. You're not actually planning to sell it and then collect the loan from it, et cetera.
And therefore you're
a shema chinam. However, But that's not the case of our mission. The case of our mission would be Shemishkin or Shaloi B'Shasavasi. You took a mashkin from him later on. What happened later on? You took the guy to Beis Din. He didn't pay. So now you tell Beis Din, the fact is, I have proof, I have edim, whatever it is, that I in fact lent him this money. I want it back. Therefore, if he's not willing to pay, go take a mashkin from him. And we will learn, in the ninth parak, we will learn the detail of our masechta, we will learn the details of on what circumstances is Beis Din able to go and take a mashkin from the person. There's rules. They can't send somebody into his house, they can only take certain kinds of things. We'll talk about it, and then we'll talk about it towards the end of our masechta. But the point is, when you're taking a mashkin at that point, obviously you're not taking it to prevent the guy from denying the claim. At that point, you're taking it, you're going to actually use it, you want to be paid. And if he doesn't pay up, you're going to sell the mashkin, you're going to sell the mashkin and use the money. So that's different. Then you're shema safa, because then you have the benefit that you can be paid out of this mashkin. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer might say that in that case, you're shema safa. That would be the case of our Mishnah. But the case where he took it, as opposed to taking the shah halva, then Rabbi Eliezer would be saying that you're shema chin. Question is, the problem with that is that in both the Mishnah and the Braise, it uses the word Hilvohu al Hamashkin, which the word al Hamashkin itself implies he lent him on a Mashkin, implying that he took the Mashkin at the beginning. And furthermore, the Ritva adds, even if you were to argue, okay, maybe the Mishnah is talking about one case and the Braise is talking about a different case, but both of them use the same word, al Hamashkin. Necessarily, they both have to be talking about the same case. So therefore, both the Mishnah that says he's a Shema Sachar and the Mishnah where Rabbi Eliezer says he's, and the Braita where Rabbi Eliezer says he's a Shema Chinam are both talking about. We took it at the beginning. Now, Ella Loi Kasha, no. Rather, we can say there's a different reason to say there's no difficulty, no contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braita. Kancho Vo Mois, Kancho Vo Peret. Because the one case can be talking about our Mishnah, the Braita is talking about where he lent him money, and the Mishnah is talking about where he lent him Peret. As we learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said that if you lent payrus, then you have a certain benefit from the fact that these payrus would have been spoiling by you and your granary or refrigerator or whatever, and like this, instead you're lending them out, and eventually you'll get back fresh ones. Uh-huh. Therefore, you can be considered a Shema Sachar. Good, Rabbi Eliezer can use the same logic in our Mishnah. As opposed to, in the Braisa, we're talking about you lend him money. And therefore, he's only a Shema Chinam, because he doesn't have any specific benefit from lending out this money.
Right.
Problem with it, that is, Muhammad Khatani is safer, but what about the Mishnah continues? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hilvol Mois Shemachinim, Hilvol Peres Shemachachar, Miklal de the Tanakama Le Shonile, which evidently that means the Tanakama of our Mishnah does not see that distinction. So again, you're back to the question, how would you think that, how would you think that that's
between Peres and money?
Between Peres and money. Apparently, the Tanakama of our Mishnah doesn't care whether you lent out Peres or money, either way, you're Shemachachar if you took a Mashkon. Now, why? According to Rabbi Eliezer, if Rabbi Eliezer says in the Braisa that you're a Shema Chinam. So the answer is Kula Rabbi Yehuda. You could answer that the entire Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda, B'chsuri Machzera, in which case the Mishnah is missing words, V'hochi Ketani. It means to say like this, Hilvo ala Mashkin Shema Sachar. When is that talking about only if he lent him food? But if he lent him money, he would be a Shema Chinam. Good. And in that case, then you could say that, and in that case, you could say very well then, again, the Mishnah would be talking about, the Mishnah, let's say, is all according to Rabbi Yehuda, who makes that distinction between Peres and Mois, that he would say, if you lent out Peres, you're a Shema Sachar, you lent out Mois, you're a Shema Chinam. Good. Rabbi Yehuda and the Braita is talking about when you lent out money, then you're a Shema Chinam. So no contradiction. Okay. Problem with that is, Yehochi kamala masnis into loik Rabbi Akiva. But if that's the case, then you're going to end up saying that the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. Because the Mishnah is saying that if you're a Shema Chinam, and Rabbi Akiva in that bright has said you are not a Shema Chinam, you are responsible for it, at least to the degree of a Shema Sachar. And we know Stam Mishner of Meir, and Rav Meir was a Talmud of Rav Akiva. So generally speaking, we should assume that a Mishnah is formulated according to the opinion of Rav Akiva. Just like we talked about the other day, we prefer to say that a Mishnah is like Rav Meir, even if it means it's not a Libur de Hilchata.
Because of that,
so similar idea over here. I mean, here it's a little bit different here than there, because here the difference is making it not like Rav Akiva also makes it not Alpi Halacha. So you have both problems. Number one, that it would be an exception to most Mishnayot according to the opinion of Rav Akiva. And number two, most Stam Mishnayot, the Halacha is like them. But in the other case, we had saying if a Stam Mishnah according to the mayor would mean that it's not a Libur de Hilchata. So we have the two things contradicting each other, but fine. It's not such a problem because I was thinking, the reason for it is like this. When we say Stam Mishnah to mayor, when we say Stam Mishnah of Meir, that means it's a factual matter. When Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, or when he did the final editing of the Mishnayos, he used Rebbe Meir's version of the Mishnayos as the basis for it. Therefore, unless we have a good reason to say otherwise, we should not assume that he took in a Mishnah from some other collection. On the other hand, to say that the Halacha is or isn't like a Stam Mishnah, all that means is fine. When Rebbe wrote the Mishnayos, he and his Beis Din decided the Halacha is like a certain opinion. Doesn't mean that other Tanoim and other Amiroim don't have the ability to argue with that. So fine, if it comes out, then because of that, Stam Mishnah is not a Libur de Hilchata, not such a big deal. But they say that it's not.
Because
it could be that Rebbe held one way, but the other Tanoim of his generation held a different way.
Right.
Anyway, but back to over here. Here, if we say the Mishnah is only like Rabbi Eliezer, it means it's not a Koin to Rabbi Akiva, and it's not a Libur de Hilchata. Ella machbar to masnis into like Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, it's clear we have no choice. We have to say that the Mishnah is only a Koin to Rabbi Akiva, not a Koin to Rabbi Eliezer. I didn't mention Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Okay, it didn't mention Rabbi Eliezer's opinion.
And we would say
that it's like Rabbi Akiva.
Because
otherwise, the Mishnah is not only not like Rabbi Akiva, which in general we should assume that all Mishnayos are like Rabbi Akiva, but number two, it wouldn't be according to Halacha either.
And it fits the opinion of Rabbi Akiva.
So it fits the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva says in that braisa over there that that he's chayev, because the other guy can say, you only lent me because of the mashkin, over the mashkin, yeah. So, and here we say, it's not exactly the same thing. The Mishnah is saying he's a Shema Sacher. Rabbi Akiva is giving a different logic why the loiver is able to not pay back the money. But it amounts, the point is, we're not saying he's a Shema Chinam. The point is, Rabbi Eliezer had said there that he's a Shema Chinam, and Rabbi Akiva is saying he's not. So therefore, it fits with our Mishnah. By the way, Tosfos has a bit of discussion on Pei Aleph Amud Beis, on Pei Beis Amud Aleph over here, also on Pei Beis Amud Beis. Tosfos goes into a whole different discussion of the sugya. In particular, we have to ask, according to Rabbi Eliezer, would there after all be a difference whether you took the Mashkin B'Shas Halva or not B'Shas Halva? Tosfos says that no, Rabbi Eliezer would. When we said that Moedir Rabbi Eliezer, that if you lent him with a shtar, etc., even then it would have to be that you took it that not only there was a shtar, but also you took the mashkin shaloi b'shas halva. Only then would Rabbi Eliezer say that in that case of a mashkin of the ma'isa.
If there's a shtar, because
the point is if there's a shtar, which there you have independent proof of it, you don't need a mashkin. So if nevertheless you take a mashkin at the beginning, fine. You could say you want belt and suspenders type thing. You want a shtar and you also want a mashkin. But if you're taking the mashkin later after the fact, plus you already have a shtar from before, which already should be enough to be able to collect on, that's when only then would Rabbi Eliezer be saying that in that case then ovad mashkin ovad marisov. That's in that case you're not a shemachinam anymore. So that's why we have to end up saying that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer, because otherwise we could have understood our Mishnah to be talking about some such case. Okay, the question is, the Gemara continues, Lema b'dilei shavi mashkin shir zuzi. Fine, should we say another angle on this machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva? Maybe they're only arguing about the case where the mashkin is not worth the full value of the loan. In other words, Rashi says, if they were exactly equal, then Rabbi Eliezer might agree that you're taking it in order to collect the loan, and therefore you're a Shema Sacher, because you have the benefit that you can collect your entire loan out of it. But if not, if it's worth less than the loan, then that's the thing. You still have the rest of your loan to collect, therefore Rabbi Eliezer could say you only took it in order to remind the guy of the loan, and therefore you're a Shema Chinam. So should we say that that is the case that they're arguing about, or would the Shmuel come to this? In which case they would be arguing about the din that Shmuel said, the Amar Shmuel, Haiman de Osfei Alpha Zuzil Chavri, which Shmuel says in that same connection, that if a person lends 1,000 Zuz to somebody else, Va'anach le Kata de Magla Ilavayu, and he gives them as a mashkon the handle of an axe for it, which is the handle of an axe is worth a lot less than 1,000 Zuz. Nevertheless, Ovad Kata de Magla of du Alpha Zuzi. If the handle gets lost, then the 1,000 zuz gets lost.
What does that mean?
Meaning, in other words, that the loan is dependent on the mashkin, and therefore, if the mashkin is gone, so again, because like we said before, because the loiva has the ability to say, look, you have to return me the thing, and then I'll return it.
The mashkin is the validity of the loan, basically.
Yes. Tosfos discusses over here. Actually, there could be two possible scenarios within that. There could be where they explicitly said at the time, where the Malva explicitly said, I am willing to accept this axe handle as a mashkin equal to the 1,000 zuzim. That would be called Parish. Versus Lloyd Parish is they didn't say anything specifically. But he took it as a mashkin without saying, I'm willing to accept it as the equivalent. Okay, so Tosfos discusses a little bit which one Shmuel would hold. Okay, anyway. So in that case, it sounds like Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing on that basis. That again, if the mashkin is worth exactly the amount, then Rabbi Eliezer would agree of a mashkin of the ma'aseh. He would agree with Rabbi Akiva on that. But if it's worth less, Rabbi Akiva would still say of a mashkin of the ma'aseh, just like Shmuel says. In other words, you can't make the lawyer pay back the loan until the mashkin is returned, and that would be Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Eliezer would be disagreeing with that.
So Rabbi Eliezer is saying you don't.
Rabbi Eliezer would say that you just have to swear like an ordinary shemachinah.
That can be cancelled even if the mashkin is worth less than the loan.
Rabbi Eliezer would be saying that only if the mashkin is worth less than the loan, that is where we can logically say the mashkin was not taken to pay back the loan, but rather just as a reminder. Therefore, you're only a shemachinam on it. You weren't intending to sell it and collect your loan from it. Therefore, you have no schar from it.
Right.
Therefore, you're a shemachinam, and therefore you just swear that you weren't peshea, and then you'll collect your debt as usual. Whereas Rabbi Akiva is the one who's saying you're shemachachar, etc. So that seems to fit with
which
rule.
What would be the...
The schar is the fact that you're able to collect part of your debt from it.
As a proof, the mashkin is a proof.
Not just a proof. No, that's the point. You said before, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's not just a proof. It's partial payment.
Partial payment.
Yes.
Right. And that's enough for Rabbi Akiva?
That's what we're saying. It sounds like Rabbi Akiva is agreeing with what Shmuel says, and Rabbi Eliezer is disagreeing with what Shmuel says. Now, the answer is, Ibdal Shavi Mashkin Shio Zuzi, no. If the mashkin is not worth the full value of the loan, then we would say both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva would disagree with Shmuel. They would say just because the handle was lost, the whole loan is not lost because of that. Because the handle itself was not even worth the full value of the loan. So therefore, just because it got lost doesn't cancel the whole loan. And in fact, the halacha is talking out like Shmuel. No, actually, the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva would be the case where the mashkin is worth exactly at least as much as the loan.
If it's worth less,
then they would say, then they would both agree that you just have to swear that you weren't pesheya or whatever, and because you're shemachinam, shemasachar, as the case may be, fine. But nevertheless, you can still collect your loan. Only if the mashkin was worth exactly as much as the mashkin. Then we would say then you have the machlokas where Rabbi Akiva says in that case you lost the mashkin, you lost the loan, and Rabbi Eliezer would be saying no, because they would be arguing over the point that Rabbi Yitzchak said. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, minayin l'bal chayv shekoyne mashkin. How do we know that when a bal chayv takes a mashkin, how do we know that he acquires it? Shenema, because the pasuk says it's considered his. Yeah, we'll talk in a second what Rashi versus all the other Rishonim say what the extent of that kinyan is. But wait, so how do we know that it's koyin the mashkin? Shenema, because the pasuk describes. Well, again, we'll learn about it in the ninth parak the dinim of how if you take a mashkin from a poor person and it's something that he needs on a daily basis, you have to return it to him every morning or every evening, as the case may be. Yeah, we mentioned it briefly before. Yeah. And the pasuk says, if you do that, it will be tzedakah
to return it
daily and pick it up from him the next day, next morning or the next evening, whatever. It will be tzedakah for you. So im ene koine mashkin, if the malva has not acquired the mashkin, tzedakah manole. What kind of tzedakah is it? Tzedakah implies you gave away something that's yours. So from here you see that the bal chayv actually acquires the mashkin.
The real kinyan.
Okay, so Rashi learned that he is kone it fully, in the sense even he's chayav for any ointment to it. So therefore, that would be the point. Rabbi Akiva would be arguing that therefore he's chayav an ointment, so therefore he doesn't get his loan back according to Rashi, it is. According to almost all the other Rishonim, it is not a full kinyan. He's not chayav an ointment. He's Tosfos talks about an Ovid Beis, for example. He's kone it to a limited extent. For example, he would be able to use this mashkin to be mekadesh a woman. To that extent, it's considered his money. Or, for example, when it comes to chametz on Pesach, he would be responsible for it. But to say that he's chayev and oinsin, no, we don't go that far, says Tosfos. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, so therefore, the point would be that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing on that point. So, according to Rabbi Eliezer, he would disagree with Rabbi Yitzchak Din. You're not koine the mashkin. It's just consider you a shomer on it. Fine, you swear like any shomer in it. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, you actually koine it. Fine, you were koine it. It's worth as much as the halva. You lost it. Fine, then you lost the halva. The question is, the Gemara says, "Tisbara, how do you think to say that that's the explanation of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer's machlokes?" You can say that Rabbi Yitzchak is talking about a case where you took the mashkin, again, the distinction that we made before, where you took it after the halva. Because that's the connection, the context of that pasuk is talking about the case where you took a mashkin via Beis Din. Where Bachutz Tamar, the pasuk says you have to stand outside, and if something is brought out to you from inside the house. We'll learn later on that the person standing outside is actually the Shliach Beis Din. And the pasuk says that if he's poor, you can't keep his pajamas or whatever overnight. You have to return him every night. and Ulachati Yitzdaka. So we see the whole context is talking about where you took it, Shaloi B'Shatav Ha'Ozen. That is when Rabbi Yitzchok says that you're Kohen Mashkin.
Why do we say it should have
been? Because that's the context of the psukim. The context of the psukim is that if somebody already owes you money and you're not allowed to go into his house to collect security for it, you have to stand, you as well as the shliach beis din, have to stand outside and the guy will bring something out to serve as a mashkin. But if he's poor and he needs it to sleep with at night, then he can't keep it overnight. You have to return it to him every night before nightfall so that he can sleep in his garment and he'll give you a bracha.
Right, after Shachavah.
So it's after Shachavah. That is when Rabbi Yitzchok says that Baal Choy Koine Mashkin. Abba Mishkin Ebeshasa Ba'asi Miyamar. Who says that Rabbi Yitzchok's din is talking about Mishkin Ebeshasa Ba'asi, that we say that you're Koine it, which that was the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva before was Beshasa Ba'asi. No. So that doesn't work. Ela Mishkin Ebeshasa Ba'asi Kulama Islahud Rabbi Yitzchok. No. So if he took the Mashkin after the Halva, then everybody would agree with Rabbi Yitzchok's din, you were Koine it, and therefore the amount of the mashkin that's equivalent to the halvah is lost if you lost the mashkin. If the mashkin is equivalent to the full value of the halvah, you lost the whole thing. If it's worth less than that, then you lost that part. Then you got to reimburse, yeah. The halach of a mishkin is b'shas halvah. So you say, no, the machloikas is, in fact, if he took the mashkin at the time of the halvah, or was shomer aveh, they're kamichli. No, the machloikas is rather on the question, what is the din of somebody who is guarding an aveh, which we learned about in Baba Kama. We also learned about briefly in Elam Tzias.
Why is considered an aveh?
Because in the sense, it's not an aveh, but in the sense you're watching something for somebody else, something which is in your possession without the other guy necessarily wanting it to be there. Deitmar, as in fact we had the discussion, Shomer Aveda, Rabba Omak Hashem Achinam, Rabbi Yosef Omak Hashem Asachar. Rabba says he is like a Shem Achinam, Rabbi Yosef says he is like a Shem Asachar, namely because of the famous Krut of Rabbi Yosef, the famous thing that we learned before, that Rabbi Yosef takes the view that since you're Oisik L'mitzvah, you'll be Potter from a mitzvah. If a poor person comes to your door at the time that you're taking care of the Aveda, you will be Potter from giving him the tzedakah. Same logic over here. You did the mitzvah of lending the guy money to begin with, and now you have a mashkin. Whenever you're taking care of it, it's a continuation of that. So therefore, we could say that Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabba, and Rabbi Akiva, and all Mishnah hold like Rabbi Yosef. The problem with that is, Lema de Rabbi Yosef Tanoihi. Should we say that that means then that necessarily the opinion of Rabbi Yosef is the subject of a machlokas Tanoim? Now, Rashi says there's no question. Obviously, not all the Tanoim can agree with Rabba. Because Rabba says he's a Shem Achinam, and Rabbi Akiva clearly says he's not. And our Mishnah says he's not. At least in some, not Shem Aveda. Our Mishnah was talking about a Shem of a Mashkin. But fine. Nevertheless, though, we still see, once we went through all the possibilities, we rejected all the other possibilities that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabba can be arguing about, and that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva can be arguing about. We're left with, fine, we have to say that they can't both agree with Rabba's opinion. They can't both agree that he's a Shema Chinam because Rabbi Akiva of necessity holds that he's not, that he's a Shema Sofer. But do we have to say that Rabbi Yosef's opinion is also the subject of the Machlokas Tanaim? Tosfos learns the other way around, by the way. Tosfos learns that Fakir, the Gemara might be asking, everybody can accept Rabba's opinion, because there'd be a difference between a Shomer Aveda versus a Shomer of a Mashkin or whatever. The question would be, Rabbi Yosef, who's saying that even a Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Sacher, do we have to say that Rabbi Eliezer is arguing with him and saying that, and saying here he's a Shomer Chinam? Okay. The answer is, Loi, but Shomer Aveda to Kulama is Lodi Rabbi Yosef. No. We can say, when you're guarding an Aveda, then there's no question, everybody agrees with Rabbi Yosef that he's a Shomer Sacher. Because you have the mitzvah that you're guarding an aveda. The halach of the malchus the schar is the prutah de Rabbi Yosef, the fact that you're oisik mitzvah and therefore you're potter min a mitzvah. The halach of the malvah tzarich l'mashkin kamiflagi. No, the machlokas over here is rather if the malvah himself needs the mashkin. If the malvah himself plans to do, like we said at the end of the Mishnah, and we're going to talk about in a couple of lines, that he plans to use the mashkin and deduct from the loan on that basis. So he needs it. So therefore, did he accomplish a mitzvah or not? Marasav a mitzvah ka'avid shehovahu, so Rabbi Akiva would hold, nevertheless, he did do a mitzvah by lending the other guy money, even though he also is getting benefit out of it, that he lent him in order to be able to use his tool and deduct from the loan. Nevertheless, we can still say that he did a mitzvah. Therefore, he has the therefore Rabbi Shema Sacher. Therefore, he has Prutu de Rabbi Yosef, and therefore he's a Shema Sacher. Omar Sava Lav Mitzvah Kavid, whereas Eliezer might say he didn't do any mitzvah. Shalon Austin is Kavin. He only did it for the he did it for the sake of his Hanah. And therefore he's only a Shemachinam, and therefore if he loses the Mashkin, then all he has to do is swear that he wasn't Kashem. Tosfos quotes from Rabbeinu Chananel a different explanation of Malva Tzarech Mashkin is if he's not willing to lend without a Mashkin. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva would say, okay, you didn't want to lend without a mashkin. Nonetheless, the fact that you lent him, you still accomplished a mitzvah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say, no, the fact that you're only willing to lend with a mashkin means you're not really doing it mitzad the mitzvah, you're doing it mitzad that you want to be paid. And therefore you can't call, therefore you can't say that you're part of mitzad prosa de reis. Okay, the Mishnah had said, Abba Shol, I'm a mutala odim lahaski mashkoni shall only be as pechas vahar. Look, we said that Abba Shol said you're allowed to rent out a poor person's mashkon and then deduct from the loan on that basis. Amr of Chonin ba'abi, Abba Shmuel halacha ka Abba Shol. Yes, halacha is like Abba Shol, you're allowed to do that. However, even without asking the other guy permission. However, af Abba Shol, le Omer, they said yesterday, af Abba Shol, le Omer, ele b'mora u'pesel v'kodum. However, even Abba Shol is only talking about certain kinds of tools, like a spade or a chisel or an axe, because the amount you can get for rent for them is you can get a nice amount of rent a rental income from them, and the damage is not really is very little. There's not really a noticeable damage from one time to another that you use an axe, let's say, or a shovel. Therefore, we assume that the owner is not going to be maxed on it, and he's happy that this way his loan is being reduced. As opposed to if it was something where each time you use it, it's noticeably
changed.
Rubbed out or whatever, or changed, then you're not allowed to unless you ask for permission, of course. By the way, the poskim also say this that you're allowed to do is you're allowed to rent it out to other people. You're not allowed to rent it out to yourself without the other guy's permission, because then we have reason to be choshed that you may undervalue how much it's actually worth per day or whatever. So like this, if you're renting it to other people, we assume you're going to ask for the fair market rental value. But if you rent it to yourself, you're likely to take a discount and say, I don't have to deduct. I don't have to deduct a dollar a day for him. I only have to deduct 75 cents a day for him.
You would have to ask if the buyer is agreeable.
If the buyer is agreeable, then he can do it. Then he can do it. You just have to.
But you don't have to ask.
But you do have to ask if you're going to use it yourself.
If you do it yourself.
But if you're renting it out to other people, then the halacha is like Abba Shol, you don't even need to ask it. Let's try to do the Mishnah and a bit of the Gemara.
Okay.
Let's see what we can do. Mishnah says, Hamad chobis m'makom l'makom. If a person is carrying a barrel of wine or whatever from one place to another, the shavra, and he broke it on the way, bein shemachinam or bein shemasachar yishavah. Whether he's a shemachinam or whether he's a shemasachar, he has to swear that he was not pesheh. Now, the real question is, which the Gemara is going to take up, that why is this considered an onus that a shema sacher should be potter with only a shavua? Why should he not have to pay? It should be similar to aveda. No, it's not so unusual. That's the thing. It's not something. A shema sacher is chayev on gneva aveda.
Right.
There's no swearing in those cases. You have to pay. He's potter on onus.
Right.
On the face of it, dropping the barrel and breaking it is not an onus. It's something that was in his control to a certain extent. Why are we saying that he can swear instead of having to pay? That's what the Gemara is going to take. Rabbi Lazar actually says on the side, Omer, Zev Zeh Yishava, it is true, I learned from my Rabbeim, that the din is that in both cases, Shemachinam or Shemachinam have to swear. However, Utmeyani im Yicholim Zev Zeh Yishava. However, I'm surprised at that. How is it possible that both of them, that a Shemachinam or Shemachinam is able to swear and get away with it? For reasons that we just discussed. Because why should a Shemir Sacha be potter on a case like this, which is sure?
Yeah, well, that's just for the Shemir
Sacha. That's what we said. Zev is that. Why should this and that? Why should the Shemir Chinam and the Shemir Sacha both be on an equal level?
Okay.
I swear, yeah. Okay.
So the question really is only
the question is really only on the Shemir Sacha, right? If somebody is carrying a barrel for somebody else from one place to another, the shavra, and he broke it, that's a braisa, which expands on our Mishnah. So our Mishnah just said it as a Stam Mishnah and then Rabbi Lazar's opinion. Now we're going to have more opinions. Bein Shemachin and Bein Shemasach Yishava, Divid of Meir. So we see that the Tana of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, as it usually is. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shemachinim Yishava Noisesachar Yishalim. Rabbi Yehuda says that if he's a Shemachinim, he has to swear. But if he's a Noisesachar, if he's a Shemachar, he has to pay. Because
without swearing.
Without swearing, because it's considered like a Neiv of Aveda. Yeah. And Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Zevazei Shava, it's me, Ani, Michal, and Zevazei Lishava. Those are the three opinions. Okay. The question is, will Memre the Sover of Meir Nitkala Peshayim? Now, does that mean, since Rabbi Meir is saying the Shema Sachar, since Rabbi Meir is saying that the Shema Chinam and the Shema Sachar can both swear and be potter, what does that mean? It means, now on the face of it, if somebody, why would somebody have dropped the barrel? L'chora, because he tripped. We learned back in Bava Kama, and that's what we're going to discuss in our sugya over here, that on the face of it, you could argue if somebody tripped, that means he was careless. He didn't look where he was going. If that's the case, what do you mean you swear in your potter? So you're telling me Rabbi Meir holds Nitzel Lav for Shehu? Well, let's see the case. Are you going to tell me the mayor says Nitkala Peshea, who that if somebody trips, he's not considered a Peshea? So all he has to do is swear that he wasn't Peshea in any other way. But we learned in a Braisa, we learned in Baba. Nishbara Kadev Laisilka, if a person's jug of water or whatever it is broke in Rosh Hashanah, Velaisilka, and he didn't remove the broken pieces or the water, we learned over there in the Gemara,
the difference.
Nafla Gmale Velaita Amida, or his camel fell down and he didn't pick it back up. Rav Meir Machayev Behazekon, Rav Meir is Machayev if somebody else comes and trips over the broken pieces or the water or the camel or whatever. Wait. Then he's chayev in the hezek. V'chamrim potim did on chayev in the shemaim. V'cham says no, he's not chayev in basin. He's only chayev in the shemaim. V'kaim alon, and we establish over there in the Gemara the minitka peshaya plagi. That the underlying machlokas is whether his tripping and breaking the barrel in the first place is pshia. In other words, nitka means tripping. In other words, Rameo would say like this. If he wasn't considered a peshaya, the fact that he tripped, then the fact that he didn't move the pieces afterwards is also not. Once they're in Rosh Hashanah, they're Hester. He's not responsible for them. The only way to make him responsible is by saying that the initial dropping of them in the first place was Pshia. And therefore, he's responsible to clean it up. So therefore, we see Rav Meir holds this color is Pshia. How does that fit with our Mishnah, where it seems that Rav Meir is saying, and the Braith has spelled out that our Mishnah is appointed Rav Meir, that all he has to do is swear, I wasn't Peshea, and that's that.
It doesn't ask him to remove it.
Yeah.
But it didn't say that it was a case where the barrel, he tripped on something in our Mishnah.
No, but it doesn't matter, though. I mean, the Mishnah just said generically that all you have to do is swear. Right. According to the mayor, any time you trip, unless you tripped over something that was there already, fine. Right. Then, but if you just trip over your own 2 feet, then the mayor would say you're a Peshea. So how does that square with our Mishnah?
And if you're a Peshea, you can't swear.
Right.
You have to pay.
Yeah, exactly. Tosfos, by the way, asks the question, which we come across in a few places in chat. We learned in Baba Kama that Adam Mu'ad Lo'olam. There's no such thing as being potter. And the answer is, Tosfos says, no. When we say Adam Mu'ad La'olam, we mean if it's a total onus, something completely beyond your control, you will in fact be potter. Then we don't say, when we say Adam Mu'ad La'olam, for example, if we assume that tripping is not a peshaya, that would be an example. Tosfos says, for the kind of onus that you're chayav for is something, for example, like it's similar to Gneiva Va'aveda in that sense. It's something which could have been expected and you should have taken steps to prevent it.
Did we have a case where he was not looking on the pavement and he tripped in the...
Yeah, we had that in that whole studio. We discussed over there where you weren't looking or there was around the corner. Yeah. We had that whole discussion over there. Okay. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Tavra. Yeah, it's a contradiction. Or Rabbi Hananel says a Tavra is a Lashon of a Shavua. Misha Shonazu, Lo Shonazu. Okay, evidently, whichever Tana taught our Mishnah is not the same one that taught the Braise in Bava Kama about Nitkal. Evidently, there's two different Tanoim who disagree in what Rabbi Meir said. But, okay. So then that's it. So Rabbi Elazar says, okay, it's a contradiction. We have two different possibilities within what Rabbi Meir himself said. Onward. But also of Yehuda Lameimah Shem Mechinim Yishava Noisesachim Yishalim. Now comes Rabbi Yehuda and says that no, you distinguish between Hashem Mechinim and Hashem Esachim. Haiki Dinei v'Haiki Dinei. Each one goes according to his own din. Fine. Rabbi Yehuda holds Nitkal is not Peshea. Unlike the one opinion we attributed to the mayor that Nitkal is Peshea, Rabbi Yehuda holds Nitkal is not Peshea.
Okay,
the fact that you tripped and broke the barrel in and of itself is not Peshea. However, therefore, if you're Shema Chin, I'm fine, no Pshia. Swear that there wasn't any other Pshia, and you're positive. Shema Sachar, nevertheless, yeah, you have to pay, because it's like a Veda. But also Rabbi Elazar Lameima, and then Rabbi Elazar comes in and says, Ein Gemara Kera Meir, it is true, I learned from my Rebbeim according to the mayor, that both Hashem Achinam and Hashem Asachar should be potter only by swearing. However, he says, I can't understand how both of them should have to swear. Namely, I can understand Hashem Achinam swears that he wasn't Pasha. El Hashem Asachar, my Mishtaba. Why is Hashem Asachar swearing? And if he wasn't Pasha, he still has to pay. It's Aveda. It's Aveda. It's yeah. And further, actually, no, you were asking that why it seems Rabbi Lazar is only asking on the Shem HaSachar. No, he's actually asking even on the Shem HaChinam. Even a Shem HaChinam, you could argue, I can understand if he was going downhill, let's say, then it's easy to see. Yeah, it's kind of loinus. It's very hard to keep your footing. So yeah, it's very easy for him to drop the barrel. But if it wasn't on a slope, then of course he was Pesheya. You don't drop barrels on when you're walking on level ground. And furthermore, Rabbi Lazar goes on to say, even if you're going to say that it was in a slope, what are you saying? You're just potter from a shavua. You're potter based on a shavua. It should depend whether there are edim present. I can understand if there's no raya, if there don't happen to be any edim around. But if there were edim around, nice raya of a nifter. Why shouldn't we make him have to bring a raya and be possible, and then he'll be possible. In other words, Rabbi Lazar is saying, I don't understand. What do you mean a blanket statement that Shem Achinam always swears in his potter? It should depend. Was it a situation where it seems to have been Shia or not? And was it a situation where at least there's Adim that can substantiate it? The Tanya is, in fact, we learn.
So far, we assume that he's a Shem Achinam.
Rabbi Lazar is asking like this. If he's a Shem Asachar, I for sure don't understand how he can swear. No matter what, it's Aveda and a Shem Asachar is Haivan Aveda. But even if he's a Shem Achinam, there should be cases where he's chayav. If it was flat ground, we should assume without even whether he swears or not, we should assume he was Pesheya. What's he doing? Dropping a barrel off flat ground. And furthermore, if there are Edim, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Isi ben Yehudaim, the Pasuk says, Ein Roya Shavuos Hashem Tia Ben Shneem, that if there's no one who saw, then there should be a Shavuah between the owner and the Shomer. Ha Yesh Roya Yavi Raya Vi Potter, implying, but if there were people who saw it, he has to bring a daya. You can't just make him potter. You can't just potter him with a shvur. So okay, Rav Meir. That is the halacha. Yeah, that is the halacha. Where there's edim available, you're responsible.
And then only then you can
be potter. If not, if the place where there's no edim, then that's where there's a shvur. Yeah. So the point is, okay, the mayor can say, I disagree with Issi, so I don't have a problem with that. But Rabbi Lazar is saying, I who accept Issi's opinion, I don't understand then how we can possibly say that Hashem Achinam should always be swear and be falter. Shouldn't there be circumstances when not? Okay, well, we'll continue with the discussion tomorrow, Rabbi Hashem.